Support for WBFO and What's Next comes from our members and from Health Foundation for Western and Central New York, where racial and socioeconomic health equity are prioritized. Learn more about building healthier neighborhoods at hfwcny.org.
I'm Jay Moran.
I'm Bridget Jaipal Valenza.
I'm Thomas O'Neill White.
We need to get together and let our voices be heard.
This is What's Next. A dedicated hour to have important conversations about the issues facing the marginalized and underrepresented communities of Western New York and Southern Ontario.
We're going to have some real healing. We've got to have space to tell some uncomfortable truth.
What's Next continues our mission to discuss race,
equity,
and the common concerns of Buffalo's East Side and beyond.
In the suburban area, everywhere, we must work and teach our children.
And good morning to you. Thanks very much for joining us on What's Next. Today, we're talking with Jasmine Westbrook. Jasmine is with the Health Education Project. Thanks for joining us, Jasmine.
Thank you for having me.
A pleasure. We've got a lot to talk about here, and I'm pleased to have somebody who is so adept at talking about so many different issues. But let's start with the Health Education Project. Why don't you just give us an overview?
Okay, so again, my name is Jasmine Westbrook. I'm a healthcare advocate with the Healthcare Education Project. We are a joint effort of the 1199 SEIU Healthcare Labor Union and also the Greater New York Hospital Association. So my role as a healthcare advocate, I am also a community organizer in some aspects. So we educate the community on different healthcare topics. So each month, depending on, like this month, for instance, we have a one pager when I go out and speak with different community groups and tabling sessions about HIV awareness.
Okay.
And so I attended an event this past Saturday in support of a support group in our community that was hosting an event, and I was able to talk about that, listen to their stories, and see how we can partner in the future. And then also, when it comes to access to healthcare, our big campaign right now is the Medicaid Equity Campaign. And so we're speaking with state legislators and urging the governor to increase funding so Medicaid can be fully funded in New York State, because so many New Yorkers rely on Medicaid. And so we have a dual role, I say. We do a lot in our community when it comes to coalition building and really educating our community on healthcare and health topics, and then also on a statewide level.
I'm really intrigued about the organizing aspect of this. I can imagine what that's like in a lot of ways. In a way, I mean, it's important work, obviously. At the same time, we're off, you know, just got off of COVID. You know, people don't necessarily want to interact like they used to, or
yes,
people are slowly coming back. So what's that like for you, the organizing element of this?
So what you said is definitely true. It definitely could be a challenge in some capacities, especially knowing when something needs to be virtual or have that hybrid component. A lot of the actions that we do, we may do joint rallies that can't be virtual, that has to be in person. But if it's an information session, or we have a smaller group that we're speaking to, whether it's a Black club or a community organization that might have their own private meetings, then we can do it to fit that group, whatever works best. So we really have to think about the population that we're trying to serve. Even when it comes to speaking with the elected officials, Zoom has been a big tool that we've been using. But if we're in Albany, then we'll be wanting to speak in person. Or if that elected official is in home, in their home office, then meet there. So it's really just seeing what makes most sense at that time, and just trying to meet that person where they're at.
Sure. Getting to where people were at. So you went to this HIV support group.
Yes.
And you heard their stories.
Yes.
Well, you probably learn an awful lot when you go to an event like that. What can you share with us?
So with that event, it was hosted, Dawn Trotter, she is the executive director of the support group Woman to Woman, We Are One. And so I attended it on a few days ago, and the stories that I've heard from the woman were very powerful, and they really just show how mental health is intertwined and domestic violence is intertwined in some cases with people and how they can contract HIV. And then also that mental health aspect when it comes to after knowing your diagnosis and getting comfortable with speaking about it and the power of that and to whatever capacity they're at. So the women that were speaking were obviously okay saying their status. They're advocates now. And they were speaking about ways that they've tried to, it's difficult too in the healthcare setting because of HIPAA and not
understood
and not invading anyone's healthcare, but also making sure that they were aware or making people aware of the support groups that are there so they have someone to speak to. And even down to one of the ladies shared how her most frightening group of people to talk to was her church community because she didn't want to be judged, and how much they embraced her once she talked about it and how much it was in her head. And it wasn't, it was just like that uncertainty.
Sure.
And just knowing how to really support other women who may be going through that. And so it was just many aspects, not only talking about the disease itself and the medication, because you can go to the doctor and get that, but being okay in these social settings.
That's really a very powerful story to share there, because, you know, your HIV, it could have come from so many different pathways,
yes.
Right? And yet there's that sense, in this woman's case, of shame, and that somehow talking to her congregation, you know, would make her almost feel like an outcast. I don't want to say a typical story, but are those the types, do you find stories like that where there are that's an obstacle to health that, you know, it's not something people are drawing up on paper, but it's a real issue.
I would say yes, especially in a disease like HIV, because the stigma attached to it and how in the beginning, how it was shown as like a gay man's disease, and that's been debunked, but
right.
That conversation is still happening, or you were a drug user. And when you're not one or the other, it's like, where do I have that space to talk about it and not be judged? And that was like the underlying conversation that was happening with a few women that did speak.
Yeah, and but you had also that sense that inside that room, that those conversations, people there was a trusting sense,
yes.
And
yes.
Of encouragement.
And that's why it's so important for support groups, no matter what the illness, the disease, whatever you want to name it, because you have someone who is either a caretaker or going through it as well that can relate to you, and you have that space to talk about it along with getting the medical treatment that you need from the providers.
Yeah, so let's maybe expand on that, because like you said, it's not just HIV, but there's so many other things that are ailing our communities. So what are some of those other types of, you know, health issues that you're finding yourself in those places? It sounds like you're a little bit of everywhere.
Yeah, so each month I'm trying to meet with a different support group. So like the last few months I've worked with the Sickle Cell Warriors of Buffalo, and so I've actually worked with them in a few scenarios. I actually met them and they were hosting a blood drive and an informational session, and I actually found out that I have the blood type that actually helps people with sickle cell, which was like, wow, that was surprising, because you have to, if you're African American, I can't think of the exact letters, but
sure.
The American Red Cross has all the information you need.
<Very good. laughs>
Again, I am not the expert as
sure.
an organizer.
You're taking in a lot of information,
yes.
and a lot of personal stories.
But it was just interesting that, you know, as an individual, now I'm able to donate blood and give it to that special group. And so that was all the way back in March when I attended that, when I first had the first encounter. And then now with the Medicaid Equity Campaign, I've been able to gather stories and have the members of the Sickle Cell Warriors of Buffalo, they've been able to share their stories with the legislators. And one of them actually was in a press coverage we had to speak about the importance of Medicaid and how it can help them, because they never know when they have to go into, if they'll go into crisis. That's the term that they use.
Okay.
And the crisis could be very different depending on the person, but basically they need to get emergency treatment. And that's the big thing in these safety net hospitals and urgent care treatments and emergency rooms, making sure that we have enough staffing and enough funding to provide the care that our community members need. And that was like a really big thing. And then another support group is We Are As One. It's a cancer support group. Mm. And so Miss Annette is the leader in that one, and she had a phenomenal event in October, really just showing love to the women that they might have already had the cancer remission, or they might be currently getting the treatment. It was a array of women in a room. She made it really beautiful. Everybody left with a gift. Like, it was like free raffles. We had great food, but we also had great information. And so we had someone, I believe from Roswell Park, come and speak. And then there was another provider in the room speaking as well, talking about getting your mammogram. And then also for men, because men can have breast cancer as well, and that's something that's not talked about, and making sure like the facts are facts and the myths are debunked, and that's really important in these spaces. And I enjoy doing that, not only because it's my job, but I like to be a wealth of information and share with different individuals the information that's important for them, so we can all have healthier lives.
So I mean, this is one of those questions that everybody talks about, but I'll let you describe it for yourself. The obstacles that we're seeing, especially in the African-American community, from health. You know, you mentioned the Medicaid portion, and we can most certainly get into that a little more extensively. But I'm just kind of curious about some of the other obstacles that you're hearing about. Why, you know, whatever the case may be, but what is maybe preventing somebody from either living a healthier life or getting well, somebody who's you know, very ill?
So access to care, whether it's the insurance that you may have, what the insurance covers, or not having insurance, unemployment can be a determiner. So social determinants of health, that's a huge one. Let's say someone lost their job or now is moved down from full-time to part-time, they may not have those benefits. In New York State, we do have the Medicaid system, but that's not true everywhere. That could be a huge determiner. Access to care, when it comes to locations or where facilities are. So in my neighborhood, I don't have an urgent care. I have a vehicle. I can drive into the suburbs to one, but I don't have an urgent care. I would just go to ECMC, but that's already overpacked.
Right.
And so when
the idea was originally
to
have these satellite locations, so to speak.
Because there's a bunch of well nows in a lot of suburban communities.
I'm flashing our Orchard Park, Amherst.
Yeah.
I can see it in my mind. Yeah.
And are these facilities on bus lines? Everyone doesn't have the luxury of having a vehicle, and making sure that people can actually get to the services that they need before they're sick too. And a lot of times people are weighing out when it comes to co-payments. Well, I don't have the $40 for the co-payment, so they're letting this illness stay in their body and doing the best they can to medicate on their own, but they're not getting the treatment that they need, and then they're visiting the urgent care or the emergency room when now it's a more severe diagnosis. And so those are a few obstacles, even when it comes to the food we have, the quality of food. The access to food is not the same across the city or across the county, however we want to break it down. And so making sure that we have healthy food options and a re-education of how to preserve foods. And we do have limited income in some places, and making sure that we're using our money in the best place. And it's just a lot of different factors when it comes to social determinants of health.
Sure.
Our housing,
some of our houses are
killing us.
Yes.
With the lead paint, the lead pipes, we have old housing stock in the city of Buffalo. So the list goes on and on and on.
Yeah, but it's interesting that to put a spotlight on those types of things, because the one thing you have, it seems, maybe compared to some other conversations you have about this, I mean, you're dealing with people like this in all sorts of venues, mm-hmm. and people who are sick in all sorts of different ways. It seems to come from, so I guess what I'm asking you is, you see at the end of the day, no matter how many conversations there have been about this, there are still systemic issues. Correct. That are just not, are very much in the way of people living healthier lives.
That's correct.
Yeah. Let's get into some of the other elements of the health education project then. So, you mentioned stressed when we first met, nonpartisan, right?
Yes, I am nonpartisan in this space.
But that's got to be an important part of that, right?
Yes. So when it comes to advocacy for healthcare, we also want to make sure that our community members are voting and making sure they are civically engaged. And so a huge lift of what we did from August up into the election in November was making sure that not only were we registering people to vote, making sure that they update their address, making sure that they're looking at their ballot. And also making sure that they're bringing people to the polls with them. So back in August, we did a day of action, partnered with a few other local organizations, and we educated people on how to do phone banking. And so it was community members calling other community members to get them registered to vote and talk to them about different issues. So if someone picked up the phone, it was great. It was hard to get people to answer with all the spam likelies.
Of course.
But once we were able to speak to community members, just seeing what's important to them. And it wasn't just like register to vote, okay, bye. It was trying to have a conversation with someone. And some people appreciate that. And it's good to know what issues are important to our community. And so when it comes to healthcare, we were really making sure that people have factual information. We had a one pager talking about what is going on with our healthcare. A big thing was like the cap of insulin. If people said, I have issues with paying for my medicine. Well, if you're diabetic or you know someone who is diabetic that meets the criteria, I believe it's Medicare age recipients that will get the $35 insulin cap. Well, may get it.
Right.
That's what it was. I'll stay nonpartisan. But
You're doing well.
Making sure that they know that is something that is happening, and making sure community members know, like, that is in the next budget. When you hear it in the news, doesn't mean it's happening the next day, because that's another education piece, too. Understanding how our budgets work, whether it's the county, the state, or the federal. And government is slower, but it doesn't happen overnight. And just having those conversations with people, and then back to voting, getting them to the polls. So we also did a Souls to the Polls with Voice Buffalo at the Delavan Grider Community Center.
It was a huge success, I heard.
Yes. And it was a lot of community organizations doing different things. The National Panhellenic Council with the Black fraternities and sororities were doing the children's voting inside, which was great. So as the parents were standing in line, the children were able to do that and get that in their mind early. I believe Horizon Health was outside helping with a raffle to get people engaged. We had a DJ, we had food. It was cold, but we had a great turnout.
Yeah.
And then also, the Board of Election was very active helping people go to other sites too if they didn't want to wait. And so it was just a great community effort. And that's something that I've been participating in since 2020. And that was when early voting was really big that first time for the presidential.
Right.
And so we started at the Gloria J this year. The last few years we've been at Delavan Grider, but just making sure that we're where the community is going. And with it's a lot of community organizations that were helping, and we actually had a strategic plan that was through the NAACP, where different community organizations, the League of Women Voters, UB Votes, just to name a few, where different districts were focusing on different parts of the city. So it wasn't chaotic, right. And that was great.
Yeah. We're talking with Jasmine Westbrook of the Health Education Project this morning on What's Next. I want to stay on this voting discussion for a little bit. This is, I at the election, I talked to a coworker who was somebody who was making a part of a phone bank and was calling. And what struck me is, you know, like you said, a lot of people aren't answering. That's the first thing. Or a lot of people might answer and hang up. But then these conversations, this is kind of hard for me because, you know, I'm sitting listening to the news in the morning here at WBFO for 5 hours a day. And so I'm hearing all these stories. And it feels to me like I'm hearing the same stories all the time. I'm hearing the same information. Everybody must know what's happening here. And what this individual told me is how many people that she was able to get through appreciated it because now there was a conversation about things that they had no idea about. And is that what you find as well?
Yes. So whether phone banking or canvassing, going door to door, those conversations are really powerful. And I think it's really good for me and other people that are doing the phone banking and the canvassing to make sure they're having a conversation and not just getting out whatever their message is to the individual, but making sure it's a two-way conversation. Because I just know what I know. I don't know what the community member really believes. I might know a fact sheet that was given to me.
So you hear some things that are kind of stunning, like take you aback?
Yes, and some of it is misinformation, but some of it is just experiences I have not experienced.
Right.
And so it is good to hear and know how can I take what this conversation was back, and then even if it's something that I need to then recall them later or revisit them, or if it was something that I didn't have the answer to, being honest about it.
I know you were, of course, the voting registration drive was focused on the presidential election. But there's a mayoral election that's going to be taking place here, and we know at least three candidates are in it. There might be more coming as well. Any sense right now about interest in that? Just a conversation I had yesterday about how some people just feel it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. Why should I vote? I'm wasting my vote.
So with New York State not being a swing state, that was already a conversation that I was having with people this year. Oh, I'm not in Pennsylvania. It doesn't matter how I vote. We always vote blue. And, you know, so the local politics and local races is something that I always talk about. And that is a lot of times that is the conversation that I have with people. They care more about the local because that is what impacts them at a faster rate than what's going on the federal. Yes, federal is about providing the funding that then trickles down, but they don't see the president walking in their neighborhoods, but they see their local officials. They see them at events. They might see them in a grocery store.
Right.
So it's just more attainable and it's just more relatable conversation.
Yeah. So you have a sense then that the interest is going to be particularly high for this?
I hope so. What I'm doing, like even at the event I was at a few days ago, I had my voter registration forms. And when I said my spiel, I'm like, and make sure you register to vote and take this to your young, adults.
You had some takers, yeah?
At that event, people all told me they were, which you know, sometimes they just say that to get me out their face. But at least they heard
feeling.
Me. But I have an event coming up that is with Buffalo Futures, which is for the 16 to 24 demographic. So I would make sure I'm having those one-on-one conversations with the young people, because you can't register to vote even before 18 at 16 and 17 in New York State, just to make sure that they're already registered. And then also if they are registered, making sure that they're updating their address and actually going to the polls.
Jasmine, we're coming down to our final couple of minutes here. So I wanted to make sure I've enjoyed the sweeping kind of subject matters that we've had, and I appreciate you. You obviously can talk about a lot of different things, but what about the call to action when it comes to the health education project? What do you want people to know?
So we want people to know that right now, New York State is paying 70 cents to every dollar back to nursing homes and hospitals for community members who have Medicaid. So that means that Medicaid is not fully funded. That means that our hospitals and our nursing homes have a deficit. And so what that means to us as community members, even if you're not a Medicaid recipient, but you go to a facility that has a high volume of Medicaid recipients, if you need emergency care in a facility that has a high volume of Medicaid recipients, you're being impacted with the underfunding, which how that shows up is longer wait times, understaffing, access to services, service line closures, removal of facilities. And so that's happening across our state. And so we need a fully funded Medicaid program in New York State so we can be healthier and people can get the treatment that they need and they deserve because healthcare is a right.
What's the hope about that particular issue? I mean, it's been kicked about here for a little bit.
So we launched it last year, so we're coming into our second year of a four-year campaign. So over a four-year period, we're hoping that it will be 100% fully funded. There was a 4% increase, so technically we're at 73-74% now. For New York State being funded, and we just hope that we reach that 100%. And the way we do that is by collecting stories from New Yorkers, so that's a big campaign that we're hosting. We have community members all the way from Buffalo to Long Island recording 30 to 60 second stories. We have clergy members and community members signing on, doing different rallies, different press conferences, speaking with the elected officials, just making sure that Governor Hochul puts that on the budget to increase the funding to 100% by that four-year period.
You're a little bit of everywhere, so where are you going to be next?
So next, we have a community town hall in Niagara Falls at the Public Library on December 16th. Mm. And we will have speakers that are in the hospital to talk about what it looks like on the front end. I'll be there to give like the facts of a little bit what I said earlier and really relating it to food equity and also housing equity and how that relates back to Medicaid. And then we'll have some refreshments too. So
do you feel just a final thought, you're very engaging, but do you feel like sometimes the problem, the healthcare problem, is so big that again maybe people are almost disconnected from it a little bit?
Yes, and I think with healthcare, it's hard until it happens to you or your family. And so we're trying to prevent more families from having to go through sick family members who may potentially die from not getting the level of care that they need. But it's a boring topic, but it's an important topic. Healthcare is something we can't escape from. So I'll continue to talk about it until I'm blue in the face.
Yeah, you're going to keep going. Now, Jasmine Westbrook, we didn't even have a chance to talk about the Howard University Bison.
Yes, I am a proud Howard alum.
Yeah, yes, you are. And also an alum of City Honors here in the city of Buffalo and University of Buffalo. You got your master's there, right?
Yes,
yeah,
I did.
Look at you. Fully vetted, for sure. Jasmine Westbrook of the Health Education Project, thank you so much for joining us on What's Next.
Thank you for having me.
An absolute pleasure. We've got more to come. This is What's Next on WBFO.
This is Jack Cruiser with the scoreboard on WBFO. Listen during Morning Edition and All Things Considered each Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for the latest on pro matchups and college rivalries, as well as standout local athletes from Western New York and Southern Ontario. Want more? Listen to a longer version of the scoreboard at WBFO.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
At Buffalo Toronto Public Media, community is at the heart of everything we do. Whether we're dancing alongside you at Porch Fest, inviting you in for a tough conversation about systemic racism, teaching you about what to do when someone overdoses, or entertaining you with free concerts in our performance space. Engaging with and serving our community is our top priority. This is Public Media.
You're listening to What's Next, our place to discuss the important issues of our communities of Western New York and Southern Ontario. We want to hear from you. Click on the Talk to Us option in the WBFO app, and we will work to get your questions or comments on the air. Do you have a story or concern that we should be addressing? Email us using whatsnext@wbfo.org. Together, we'll have the conversations that are needed. This is WBFO, your NPR station.
And welcome back to What's Next. With us in studio this morning, we have Dr. Monica Miles. Dr. Miles comes at us with a couple of different approaches or a couple of different aspects to her career. She is the co-founder, president, and community coordinator for Mother Earth Literacies, and also an assistant professor in the Department of Engineering Education at the University at Buffalo. So, Dr. Miles, thanks for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. Excited to be here.
Yes, very excited to have you as well. And because, well, we've mentioned this. I recall meeting you once a couple of years ago, and we kind of touched on some of the things that you were doing. I was very intrigued at the time. So here we are circling back and finding you here in the studio with me. It's great. Mother Earth Literacies. Let's talk about that first and foremost, because this is an interesting effort that's bringing a certain type of expertise and combining it with a lot of the efforts that we've had a chance to talk about here on What's Next, some of the nonprofits, especially those focused on the issues of the East Side.
Absolutely. And so one of the things I will say is that Mother Earth Literacies is a passion project, but we've allowed it to grow and really responded to, like, what are people asking us for and what do people need us to do? And so even though we started off, because we're both education researchers, myself and Dr. Kate Hock, both SUNY alums, and we started developing curriculum, and we're like, wow, this critical curriculum, this is going to sell like hotcakes, right? And that didn't happen.
A critical curriculum is going to sell like hotcakes.
Right. And we were just like, oh, because we were so passionate about it, and we were able to make all these connections. And when we found nonprofits in the education sector that were interested in it, we realized that there were some barriers to them fully implementing and picking up the curriculum. And so I always want to give credit to Wakanda Alliance for really being one of the early advocators, if you will, of you got to get, you know, Dr. Monica and Dr. Kate in here. And so what we found through there is we became nonprofit sustainability experts. We took our ability to learn things and listen as qualitative researchers, and then our ability to learn. And we were like, well, wait a minute. There's a lot going on here, and who's going to help you with this? And so what started off as curriculum work became, now we're sustainability experts in the nonprofit space, where we really listen and learn to the organizations. But I kind of call us like the Olivia Popes on the inside, where we're fixing, right? We're not just giving them recommendations, but we're really helping Black-led nonprofits meet the needs of the community that we desperately and genuinely care about, and that's what kind of people come to us for.
Yeah, so let's talk about some of that work then, because it is interesting. I bet if we started listing some of your clients, I would probably say, well, we've had them on for this, that, and another thing. But you know, and the one thing we find, a great passion, a great commitment. But of course, resources are limited, which is a big part of it. So is that, can maybe go through how you're working with some of these groups to try to merge those realities?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think some of it is that one of the things I will say about all of our leaders is not only are they passionate, they're resourceful. So we never say like, okay, you're doing it wrong. It's kind of like, well, how are you doing it? And identifying, okay, well, do you need to diversify your funding? I think people probably most know us for grant writing, but we write grants in a way where we know the programs, we know the people. We're not writing based off of what we want you to do. We say, well, what are you doing? How are you measuring this? Really honoring the work that people are doing. And then when the grant gets funded, because I think people have seen that, where somebody else writes the grant, they're not totally connected, and they're like, well, why'd you write it like that? Like, you didn't know who we were.
Sure.
And so I think that's one of the aspects. We also provide support for their boards, right? Do they need to recruit for their boards? Do their boards need to be trained to understand What does it mean to be a board member? You know, how are you championing? How are you being a champion for the organization? Do you need to be in the state system? Have you reached out to, you know, your state folks? Have you reached out to your county folks? What are the different funding sources? And are you tapped in there? Is it a paperwork issue, right? And if it is that, well, that's easy. Just fill out the form, right? And we help them with that. And so we love the work that they do so much. And we like to think of ourselves as, you know, when an organization is like, okay, all right, we might not need Mother Earth Literacies at this juncture. We're like, well, we've done our job. And now that creates space for another organization. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, so you work with the, you know, you're working with these nonprofits, and it's got to be interesting to see how many different nonprofits are focused on real community needs.
Yeah. Oh, wow. And I would say that's through this work, and it's been a total blessing to work so closely with the leaders and the organizations that it helps us have a well-rounded, so everything from every bottom covered, right? And we're thinking about diaper distribution, right? But what does the leader need, right? And so we've done a lot of works where we focus on the leader and so that they're not burnt out. So we've done a burnout prevention series where we're actually looking at, well, if we lose one of these leaders, we might potentially lose an entire organization.
Right.
And so do we have standard operating procedures? What is burning them out? Do we know where they're at?
Are you seeing that? It does sound like a common thing, right? And especially, like, I thought what was interesting is saying, if the leader, for some reason, can't continue, the organization might not be able to operate.
Yeah, well, I've said this as delicately as I can, is that we are expecting so much from our Black leaders where they can't even get sick.
Right.
Right. People in their households can't get sick, and they're experiencing the same amounts of trauma as the rest of the community. But they have to, you know, get up in the morning and make sure that the organization is running, and they have to think at a very systematic level. And it's also not, I would say it's not fair in some ways. And I think that that's where, at least I would like to say, Mother Earth Literacies is trying our best to step up and say, you know what, we're going to help shoulder some of this work, right? And so not only are we looking at burnout, you can be as pie in the sky, silver lining as you want to be, but if you're burnt out, it's just an increase of your own health and well-being, right? So that means you're more susceptible to actually getting sick because you're actually in a state of chronic burnout. And so do we see that? Absolutely, we see that. And then we ask our leaders, okay, well, what is the thing that's keeping you up at night? We're going to start to tackle that issue. What's the next issue? What's keeping you up at night? Because usually that issue that's keeping you up could be a very a point of your burnout contention. But do we see that when we've worked with them for a period of time that can decrease? Yeah, but that's through proper support, listening to what they're saying that the problem is. Is it a resource issue? Not everyone has a resource allocation. Now, any of our organizations, yes. Do they need more money? Yes.
Of course.
But are they so resourceful? Yes. They have been, most of them have either operated or learned how to operate off volunteers, have learned how to operate off of no funding or shoestring funding. So they're as resourceful as we are going to make them be. And it's almost unfair to say, well, now we need you to be even more resourceful. No, this is where we've identified a need in the nonprofit ecosystem, if you will, of making sure we have an understanding of funders. And then we've even created events in partnership where we have nonprofit leaders come and meet funders. And it's just a mixer.
Okay.
No agenda. You just come, meet, have, you know, if you want to have a drink, have a drink. There's food. And then we just have them where they have their green button, their green pin, if your green, sticker, if you will, if you're a funder, right? Money, green.
Green, good.
The nonprofit leaders have yellow. Your job is to just go meet someone you didn't know before.
Sure.
And from that, it was just it was just magical what has come out of that, where they're getting FaceTime with major funders in our area.
You know, as I mentioned before, and and you were just talking about it, how we've had an opportunity to meet a lot of these leaders from the Eastside community who are committed to trying to make things better and, you know, just going. But, you know, I've talked to people who, you know, worked the regular job and started a nonprofit at the same time, you know, used their savings to start a nonprofit, you know, working, you know, 7 days a week, you know, 14 hours a day. Is that championed enough? Do we, is there enough of a spotlight on that? Because that's what I find amazing, that there, the type of commitment that we're seeing to some very difficult issues.
Yeah. And I would say, and it's also, I commend every last leader that we work with, that we have worked with, and then those that we will work with, right? Is our cup runneth over of these individuals that are giving it literally all that they've got, right?
Absolutely.
And their families. And, you know, and I think that's one of the things that I love about this is I get to meet, you know, the people that support the leaders in this work. And I still go back to, what we're asking them to do is so, it, not only is that not celebrated enough, but we also should not be expecting everything that they have to solve a social community issue, and sometimes by themselves, right? And so I love how Raj shares how, you know, she started Every Bottom Cover from understanding her own need with her own child from her kitchen table, right? And so you hear these stories and then people talk about, oh, well, we have so many nonprofits in Buffalo. Yeah, some of them may not be active, but there are a lot that are active. And then people will say, well, aren't you in competition with so-and-so? And it's like, well, no. I really, and what one of the things that stood out to me, they had a the elders of the Black Panther Party movement, women did a talk panel discussion at the university, and Blur was there. So you had Felicia was on the panel as well. And one of the things that has literally stuck with me is that they didn't believe in competition. They were like, no, we want you to replicate. We wanted you to duplicate. And that was just a major paradigm shift where, and it also challenged some of the discussions that we would have in, you know, when we're talking nonprofit. Like, yes, there are very few resources that we're all kind of clamoring for. But what if we didn't approach this as a, we're in competition.
Right.
We're in collaboration. You like how we did that and you want to duplicate it in that way? And that paradigm shift has really stuck with me in that we're not each other's competitions, but how can we celebrate? How can we support? And that's one of the things I love about Mother Earth is that we get to celebrate with the leaders when they, maybe it's only a $5,000 grant, but that $5,000, because they are like, they're like innovative hustlers by design. We know that $5,000 is going to look like $50,000, right? And that's one of the beautiful things is that they've learned how to operate off of so little that when they do get it, it just like blows your mind how they're able to magnify its usage. And so I've just loved being engaged in this space.
We're talking with Dr. Monica Miles this morning on What's Next. Dr. Miles, we were just talking about Mother Earth Literacies. She's the co-founder and president of it, but also an assistant professor in the Department of Engineering Education at the University of Buffalo. And we have work going on at the University of Buffalo through your work that it kind of mirrors, I guess, Mother Earth to a certain extent. But at the same time, what we're talking about is you're getting engineering students from UB Amherst, that, you know, beautiful engineering department out there. You're getting engineering students to go into the East Side to help with some of these different efforts. This is really fascinating. Let's talk about this a little bit more.
Yes, here. Absolutely. So one of the things that I've loved about this work, and you know, sometimes we have to, it becomes challenging, right? Because you don't want to put yourself in a box, but sometimes you have to be in the box in order to move some things along. And so through this work, we have Mother Earth Literacies, where I'm an entrepreneur. I'm doing this work in the community where I only win when they do, right? And then we have this other arm where You know, I have my research lab that I've developed where it's the Environmental Justice Action Research Lab, where we have engineering and STEM students, and I call them STEMers, right? So that can be anyone from sustainability or any kind of STEM background, where they're coming into my lab. And, you know, the way we talk about it, you would think I have like a big old center. We're like, you know, it's just my little office that I share on North Campus. And they're like, you're doing all of this from here. And it's literally students are chomping at the bit to not only do one thing, get off campus.
Right.
They're like, get off campus. Where are we going? Right. And then when they interact with me and they see this genuine love for the Black community and how I'm able to make connections to nonprofit organizations. And one of my students has shared, like, Dr. Miles, wherever you go, we just get embraced. Like, we just, it's like they know us already. And they're so happy that we're there. And then I describe them as, here's our engineer. Here's one of our sustainability experts. I don't say, you know, they're not an expert. I don't say they're going to be an engineer. I'm like, no, that's our engineer. They're going to help us solve this problem. And by engaging in students in that way, one, it increases their own sense of belonging to not only the institution, but to Buffalo. And it increases their own efficacy where they're like, wow, I can solve this problem. And if not, I may not know it right away, but I will. Right. And so I just approach every problem as it's solvable. Right. And so connecting our students from UB to the east side of Buffalo and finding and making meaningful connections to our cup runneth over when it comes to data science issues. Our cup runneth over of having engineering issues. But connecting in an intentional way where students are being connected to local community problems, it has just been amazing to watch the students' growth and their own like empowerment of like, I'm an engineer that can change, and they can pinpoint to a project that they worked on. It has been just a beautiful thing to watch and grow, bringing them out into the community.
Another big part of this that we talked about before we went on the air, and I think this is a fascinating element, is you're making sure before these students head out that they have, you know, they're versed in diversity.
Oh, yeah. So we, and I think that's everyone's kind of like, well, you can't just, how are you preparing them, right? You know, so they're not just coming in with deficit depictions, that they are seeing the beauty that I see in the community and so on and so forth. And so there's a couple things that I've woven into my practice where our students at UB, their schedules are jam-packed. But one thing I really have learned and love about them is if, you know, you're saying, hey, well, I need you to read this and watch this. And then I want you to think about it and come prepared to talk. And we're going on, and this is where we're going, right? That pre-work, they do it. Right. And I know as a proud UB alum, and even my daughter's is at UB, I really love the potential that UB, the university, has of continuing to cultivate those meaningful connections. So the students watch Race, the Power of an Illusion. Right. And so that's a PBS special that was created, was funded by Ford years ago, but it's a documentary that has three series that students can watch from the UB library,
okay.
Right? So use your resources, right? And telling them, hey, you may have to map your resources wherever you go. An environment may have everything that you need, or it might be missing something, right? So showing them how to find additional trainings, right? So if you find that you need to learn more about this, well, don't be waiting for somebody to come save you. You go figure it out. Like, you're a STEMer, right? You can do this. Go and figure it out. And through that, and I said, you may create or think of something that we have missed, right? And so even they learn, what is a nonprofit? What is a small business? Like, what is Mother Earth Literacy? What is a small business? Because they need to understand that they may step into a workforce where it might not be a big for-profit organization. It might be a nonprofit. You need to know the different models or different working models that you may find yourself in, right? And then even as they're thinking about the workforce, well, if you're someone that isn't motivated by money, okay, you may find these kinds of positions are best. What is the thing that's going to fill your cup, right? And are we aligning you to what different types of opportunities are available? So that's something that I work with each student on, is learning kind of like, what are they interested in? What kind of makes them tick? And then making sure that they're as positioned as possible to land 10 toes down on the other side of their degree.
At this time of political stress, we'll call it that, yeah, yeah, for lack of a better term, there's a pushback when it comes to DEI.
Oh, yeah.
At the same time, you're telling me, though, and we talked about this before, and I think this is fascinating, when the student is introduced to diversity education before they undertake these elements at the beginning, it only increases their critical abilities. That's fascinating.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I think that's one of the things is that, so, and I'll preface this by saying, you know, my research paradigm is I'm a critical race theorist, right? The thing, and at one point, you couldn't even say that. At one point in my career, I couldn't even say whiteness or whiteness as property. At one point, I was not able to do those things. And right, and throughout time, you know, society picks these things up and then they're like, oh, that's all that was. And so you learn how to describe your work, right, with honoring who you are, what you understand the historical context to be, and how to kind of get the work done, right? That's one of the things I love about being a critical race theorist, is we don't know for the sake of knowing. What are you going to do now that you know? People don't talk about that last tenet, right? And so your position may not be, and we're going to see that those titles are going to go away. There's not going to be a diversity and such and such and such and such. But your paradigm and who you are and how you do the work, that should be a core part of who you are and how you get it done, right? And that's also one of the things that when people will say, well, Monica, would you ever hold a diversity title? Now, if it comes out and happens later on, you can come back and get me. I will not seek out a position that is anybody's diversity, whatever. Because we also see the research, those people aren't always positioned to actually get some of the work done. It's the most unsupported, right? So they're not given the funds. They're not given the power to actually do the thing. But if you take someone who has a diversity lens and you place them over your finances, well, you're going to have more of the outcome that you were looking for, right? And so, and I know I've kind of said, listen, I will never. So if it comes back, I know the community's going to rag me. Dr. Miles, you said, listen, so if it happens, y'all be patient with me. I just don't foresee it in my.
But what you're saying is it'd be better just to have more people in positions of power and influence who have just a diversity education understanding,
yes,
than necessarily just putting a label on, right, somebody and say, this is your office and this is your heading.
Right. And also, it takes the pressure off of that person that has that title.
Right.
You're not going to know how to solve every problem. Be okay with that. You're not a finance expert. You're not, and you know, let's say you're an industrial engineer. And then you put somebody with a diversity title, but maybe you're actually not an industrial engineer. But what we need is that industrial engineer to have a diversity understanding and paradigm, right? How are they thinking about people? Right. Those that are the most marginalized. That's one thing I love about critical race theory, because remember, at one point, I couldn't use that term. I was given talks where they were like, listen, you're going to have to take this out of your title.
Wow.
Right. And so I think because I have I've been doing this a while, we've had to change our labels. And that's why I told my students, hey, you may not be able to use diversity. Just call yourself a humanitarian. Pick a title that's, you're still doing the work.
Right.
You're still doing it. And I know that may also get some pushback from folks. But when you've had to get the work done and you've had to do it for quite some time, you figure out, well, what's the label I can put on what I'm doing so I can get it done? Right. And so, yeah.
Dr. Monica Miles with us. We're coming down to our last couple of minutes here on What's Next. You know, you said something before. We also were talking about how certain things don't get the spotlight they deserve. Mm-hmm. You mentioned how you were talking about your community and the beauty that you see in it.
Yeah.
Tell me about the beauty of the community. I want to hear your.
Oh my gosh. So I will say, I can't think of not one partner now that I step into their place where I laugh. Right. I think that's one of the things, like, they say laughter is, you know, medicine. You're embraced. the leaders in the community will tell you that they love you, that they appreciate you, that they see you. That has happened on so many occasions where, you know, and I'm just, I'll give Delavan Grider, and I just can't give them their flowers enough, right? I have a satellite office there, right? So, and my satellite office is used for all kinds of things. And, you know, and so I may get there and they may be having a conversation or engaging in a Zoom meeting. And then it's like, okay, well, I'm going to go sit in the senior room, right? I laugh so much by just engaging with the seniors and how much they love the center and how serious it is and you know, how they run the clothing closet. They have so many different things that happen there that you almost can you would miss it if you were not embedded in the community. So it isn't this thing where it's like, oh, you know, I'm doing like spot, you know, I'm my children are raised in the community and doing this work. So it's not just this thing that I'm doing on the side, but it's incorporated into like who I am and how I show up. And, you know, if Delavan Grider needs me to answer the phones, because sometimes you may have me answering the phone, right? Whatever you need me to do, I'm going to do that thing, right? And I think I give that credit to just how I was raised, right? And so my parents were like, if you see a job that needs to be done, do it, right? Just do it, right? If you saw that piece of trash needed to be picked up, why did you step over that, right? And so I think it's just taking that, how my parents would fuss, right, about these things. Like, if you see something that needs to be done, just do it. And I think that's one of the things I love about being in the community, is that there's always something that needs to be done.
Well, Dr. Monica Miles, you're doing an awful lot here between Mother Earth Literacies and your work at the Department of Engineering Education at the University of Buffalo. Thanks very much for joining us on What's Next. This is What's Next on your NPR station in Western New York, WBFO and WBFO HD1 Buffalo, WOLN Olean, and WUBJ Jamestown.
Support for WBFO and What's Next comes from our members and from Health Foundation for Western and Central New York, where racial and socioeconomic health equity are prioritized. Learn more about building healthier neighborhoods at hfwcny.org.